Hi, I'm Emily Liddell.
And I'm Kyle Cacciadorian.
And you're listening to a pandemic version of The Accessible Still.
How you doing, Emily?
I don't even know how I'm doing. I don't know what day it is. I don't know where I am. That's not true. Same place I always am. How are you?
I am fine. And we are fine. And we hope you are fine.
Yes, most importantly, we hope that you and your loved ones are healthy and well. On top of that, though, did you all forget that there's an election happening in November? Because sometimes I feel like I forgot.
I feel like this is a mild segue into what we're talking about today, Emily.
Oh, it's a major segue. Totally set it up. Anyway, so I'm pretty excited because we have a special guest who is not only special, but also my friend. So I'm pretty amped. Special guest, please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm amped to be here with you, Emily, and Kyle. I'm Alexa Laycock. I work for Rooted in Rights. I'm an editor and I guess kind of everythinger there. So hi, everyone. I'm really happy to be on this podcast today to talk to you about voting.
So exciting.
Yeah, super pumped. But also, what about voting? What are we talking about today?
We're going to talk about a voting series called Vote for Access. That's produced by Rooted in Rights and Block by Block Creative and sponsored by many PNAs from all across the country. And it's about like the right to vote for folks with disabilities and common things that aren't thought about, should be thought about, and hopefully will be thought about as we're moving forward in voting options.
Hey, Alexa, what's a PNA?
Thanks for asking. A PNA is a protection and advocacy organization. Each state and territory in the United States has a protection and advocacy organization that's designed to protect the rights of people with disabilities.
I feel like they're not a well-known resource, or as well-known as they should be.
No, I definitely think that that's true. And part of what we're hoping to do with this voting series is say, like, hey, you have a protection and advocacy organization in your state. They are, you know, literally designed to help you vote. That's one of the things that they do. It's one of their funding sources. So reach out to them and figure out what resources they have available because they're there to help you.
That really is like awesome. You know, it's funny because before I heard of Rooted in Rights and Disability Rights Washington, I did not even know what a PNA was.
I didn't know what a PNA was either. I looked up, I found Rooted in Rights, not because I knew what a PNA was, but because I was like video things in Seattle where I live. And then I found out about this whole system that actually probably could have helped me out a lot in previous years. I just didn't know about it.
I guess that sort of speaks to why a project like this is so important.
Yes. I mean, hopefully this gets the word out, not only about voting rights, but about resources that can help everyone vote.
Speaking of this project, I came onto it as sort of an employee slash representative of Block by Block Creative. You know, I'm part of the distro team and I was not part of the production team, but I know you were. And
oh, yes.
When I showed up, you were just wrapping up the editing to this project. So I didn't really have any idea of how the project was like put together or came to life. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
So the project is a 5-episode series on voting. And this project initially was thought of by Jordan Melagrana, and he has a company, Block by Block Creative. He used to direct Rooted in Rights as well, but he pitched this project as a collaboration between Block by Block and Rooted in Rights. And he also pitched it to a bunch of protection and advocacy organizations at the National Disability Rights Network conference. And so a bunch of PNAs or protection advocacy organizations signed up to basically sponsor the project, to get to have input about what we included, and then ultimately to distribute it. Initially, we were going to go to a bunch of different states and interview people in person and find out different stories about voting. But we ended up realizing that the budget was just going to be too high to travel to each state. And so we came up with the idea of having a host and then doing remote interviews so that we could get a range of perspectives from a bunch of different states and talk to people with disabilities about like their voting successes and their voting struggles and the things they'd like to see. And we brought on Amani Barberin to be our host for the series. Emily knows Amani. I met Amani at Netroots and, you know, thought she would be a good host for the series. And so she came on and we co-wrote them and then we filmed them and now we're editing them. And soon they will be available to everyone to inform people about voting rights and voting solutions and things to consider when you're thinking about making voting accessible.
So fun fact, Amani was actually a guest on our podcast a while ago now, talking about life as the hashtag queen.
Sure.
So it's, you know, really, really great to see this cross collaboration among the disability community. And so I would love to hear a little bit more about what the Vote for Access project entails. What are the issues that you guys are focusing on? Because as I think we all know, there are so many issues that disabled people face when it comes to elections and voting. So how did you narrow it down and what did you focus on?
I mean, that's a great point, Emily. When you think about voting, it's sort of like, what isn't an issue for folks with disabilities?
Right.
It's sort of harder to say what's actually working amazingly well for everyone than it is to say, yep, there's a lot of barriers. So we split the series up into 5 episodes. Our first episode is attitudes. So the idea of attitudes is that there is a lot of stigma around people with disabilities. And a lot of the reason that people don't feel comfortable going out and voting is because poll workers maybe aren't familiar with folks with disabilities and they don't know the best way to assist if assistance is even necessary. And also changing your attitude can be like a really simple solution to making voting more accessible. If you just change your attitude about who you think should vote and why you think that is, there might be more access to voting. Our second episode is about information. We thought it was important to include the whole spectrum of voting, because voting starts when you're learning about the issues. It's not just the day at the polls. So we have an episode about how information can be inaccessible. Our third episode is about when you're physically at the polls, the barriers that can be there in terms of physical access to the space. And of getting to the polls to a certain extent. And we have an episode about when you can't get to the polls, which is mail-in ballots, and the fact that there's a lot of great alternatives to voting, but many of them aren't accessible, and they also don't take into account different needs. And then episode 5 is about voter suppression, because we really felt it was important to include the disability voice in larger conversations around voter suppression, because that perspective is not often included. That was kind of a long explanation of what's in each video. How we narrowed that down was really, we were trying to think of the whole spectrum of voting from when you find out about what you're even supposed to vote on to the process of voting, to the process of like feeling included in the process of voting and like the process of democracy in America.
But I think it's okay that was a long answer, because voting is one hell of a process when you're disabled, and we need to acknowledge that.
Yeah. I there's no part of the process that is actually wonderfully accessible at this point. And we also were pretty clear with our project that we weren't making get out and vote videos, because there are a lot of great get out and vote videos. And also we sort of felt that get out and vote videos ignore the fact that there are systemic barriers to voting. You can't just always try harder through those barriers.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that's such a good point.
Everyone's like, go get out and vote. And we're over here like, hello, we can't.
Right.
Thanks for asking.
Right. Yeah. And even like, you know, for folks in really rural areas too, like just telling people to like get into a car and drive 4 hours to get to their polling location, like that's just not reasonable for everybody.
That's so true. I mean, honestly, my polling location is a wheelchair ride away, mm-hmm. or an even faster car ride. But I can literally roll to my polling location. And I know not everybody has that privilege, but for me, I live in a big town with 5 elementary schools, and so that's where they hold, or at least in one of the elementary schools, is my polling place, and so it's just really, really easy to get there. but it's not like that for everyone, I recognize, especially in rural areas.
Yeah. And I mean, there's so many laws that have been passed that are laws designed to help specifically folks with disabilities vote. But a lot of those kind of rights and accommodations aren't well known. That information isn't as out there as I think it could be. So even if, you know, some folks do have barriers to voting, but there are accommodations available or should be available that people can ask for. And, you know, it can definitely be exhausting to advocate for those things if they're not already being provided when they should be. But there's a lot of laws out there that say you have to make voting accessible.
Yeah. And also, in the midst of a pandemic, it kind of seems like now more than ever, we need to be acknowledging that.
Yes. Our fourth episode, that's about when you can't get to the polls, we talk about mail-in ballots, which are great, except that they're not accessible. Traditional mail-in ballots are not accessible, because if you just have a printed piece of paper that you have to fill in each of the bubbles, you know, independently, if you can't access a paper ballot at a poll, there's no reason you would be able to access it in your home. It has the same accessibility problems. So
that is a challenge.
Yes. So we want people to be thinking, especially as we're considering, doing different types of voting options for fall, we want to make sure that they're accessible to start out with, because we're sort of already hearing rumblings that states are like, okay, we need to immediately switch to a type of voting we haven't used before. We can't bother with accessibility. There's no time. And like, there has to be time. If you're going to make a whole new system, why not just make it accessible from the start?
Right.
Can you tell us about some of those other accommodations are that you mentioned other than mail-in voting?
Yeah, absolutely. When you're at the polls, there's already a rule that folks with disabilities need to have the right to private and independent voting. So at a polling center, what this can mean is that you can either get a poll worker to assist you in some way, but they also need to give you privacy. There's also accessible voting units, or AVUs, that allow folks with disabilities to vote in a variety of ways. For some of them, they have different hookups so that you can hear the ballot and with headphones and make markers using a remote control thing so that you can mark your ballot with it being read aloud to you if you are blind or low vision, or if you have dyslexia and you'd prefer to hear rather than read. And they're supposed to be accessible voting units at all voting centers, or at least ones available, but often they're there, but maybe poll workers don't know how to use them, or they're not plugged in. So that becomes a problem, where like, there is an accessible way to vote, but it's not fully ready because it's not plugged in or it's not ready to go. So basically you have the right to private and independent voting. You have the right to bring someone to assist you if you don't want a poll worker, or if you do need assistance, you have the right to bring someone to assist you. And you do have the right to vote. I think a lot of folks with disabilities are told that maybe they can't vote, or, you know, it's too much of a process to get them their ballot. And that's just not true. Like, you have the right to vote. Unless you know, for some reason, your right to vote has been taken away, you do have the right to vote. And there are ways to get people signed up for that.
Yeah, we are not here for the voter suppression.
Right.
Accessible at all.
Yeah.
Can you tell me anything surprising or strange, at the very least, that you learned about the voting process that you didn't know before you started researching for the series?
There was a lot I didn't know when I started researching for the series, to be honest. I honestly didn't realize in a lot of states how long you have to like wait outside before you can even get into the polling place, before you can even cast your vote. That like there is really... voting is really an all-day process for some people in terms of needing to drive there, needing to wait in line. I guess I didn't realize that it was still that difficult in a lot of areas. I guess it's not like a really good specific one.
No, I mean, but that is specific, because I don't think that we think about that when we live in more suburban or urban areas where...
Yeah.
You know, although honestly, I take that back, because I remember during the election, seeing the photos from New York City of polling places that were due to close and the lines were still wrapped around the block with people right. who hadn't voted yet. So I'm actually thinking, because I live in a more suburban area with multiple locations to vote, I haven't really had that problem. Either that, or people just aren't politically engaged enough in my town, and so aren't exactly showing up in droves to the polls. But yeah. it's still something to think about. Like, it's not accessible for people to wait online for that long,
mm-hmm.
to say the least.
I fully agree. That's like, I don't need many accommodations, but if I need one, it's anything to mitigate my inability to stand online. Mm-hmm. And I echo Emily's words, because I live like two blocks away from my polling station, and I can walk there even in the worst weather, and I'm in and out in 10 minutes. And it's unbelievable to me that's not true for everybody, even though, like, I know it. When you see it in front of you, it's hard to imagine that this is the reality that people face when they just want to vote.
Right. And that, like, some people are willing to do it still.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, they're like, yeah, no, I'm going to get in the car and I'm going to use my last take of gas to, like, get to the polling center. And I'm like, wow, that is really commitment to voting. Like, I don't even know if I would be that committed if it was that difficult for me to get to a polling place.
Well, honestly, it makes me think of everything that just went down in Wisconsin, because yep. I mean, people showed up because they weren't about to let their right to vote be taken away. But I mean, I read a story about a woman who held up a sign the entire time she was waiting online that said, "This is ridiculous."
Yep. And it was yep. truly ridiculous. Like, there was no reason for that in a pandemic to make people go outside and stand outside together to vote.
Yeah, which is why I think vote by mail is so important, but it's not something that I have personal experience with. I know absentee voting is different than vote by mail. And I do get absentee ballots for when mm-hmm. I wasn't able to drive. But, you know, I want them to extend vote by mail, even though I know that it comes with its own subset of problems.
Sure. I mean, yeah, obviously it's not accessible if you're blind or low vision. And if you do need assistance to fill out a ballot, then your vote's not necessarily private or independent. So that's kind of the fundamental baseline for, like, is your voting accessible? It means you have to be able to do it privately and independently. And I do think a lot of folks with disabilities, even ones who have been using absentee or mail-in, they often have been collaborating with, like, friends or other people that they know or family members to, like, help them access their ballot, which is great. But also that means it's not private and independent.
Yeah, which is a huge violation.
Right.
I'm curious, though, mm-hmm. and you can totally be like, no, this is too much of a violation of privacy. But did you find that any of the issues that you were talking about affect you personally? Or did you feel like there were strategies or things that you kind of learned more about to help mitigate voting issues for you?
Yeah, this was more, I learned information that would have been useful for a past me, because I didn't have an address for a really long time. And I thought, because I didn't have an address, that meant that I couldn't vote, that, like, I couldn't get a mail-in ballot sent somewhere, or I couldn't go to a polling place because I didn't have an address. And so I couldn't prove, you know, what county I was in or whatever. And that actually wasn't the case. Like, I could have voted. It would have been a little bit trickier in terms of like assigning an address, but I could have assigned, like, said, hey, here's my friend's address, or here's an address of a local place in the county where you can send a mail-in ballot to. So that I didn't know that I could have voted even though I didn't have an address for a couple of years. Like, I thought I had to have my name, like, I had to live somewhere, I had to have an address in order to vote.
That is really important to know.
And I think, you know, it does vary state by state. Different states have different laws about, you know, some states have voter ID laws, which we don't have in Washington state, and voter ID laws do make it harder to vote. And I think, you know, not having an address in a state with voter ID law is definitely more of a problem. But at least in Washington state, like, there are options to have you register at a particular location or possibly even a public location and have that be your address for the purposes of voting. So I wish I would have known that when I didn't have an address for a while.
There was one gentleman in one of the episodes that he's an incarcerated gentleman and he didn't even know that he could vote from jail. He just didn't even occur to him to ask that question.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks don't, you know, if you haven't, if you're in jail and you're awaiting trial, like you still, your voting rights are intact. I mean, you know, you might have the right to vote, but, you know, is the jail gonna let you vote or provide you with a way to vote? Like that's kind of iffy. And, you know, thankfully the jail in King County worked with Disability Rights Washington and they had Daria come in with an accessible voting unit and had him vote, which was great. But yeah, even for folks who maybe have had their voting rights taken away, they can be restored after a certain amount of time. So I do think there's a lot of assumptions about like who can't vote and who isn't allowed to vote. And I don't think those are necessarily true. And especially for folks with disabilities, often, you know, if you're under guardianship, there can be kind of the thought that, oh, I'm under guardianship, so I can't vote. And that's not necessarily true either. So there's just a lot of vague ideas about who can and can't vote. And a lot more people are eligible to vote than I think realize it.
Yeah, it's a whole tangled web of God only knows. What are you hoping people take away from this series?
I really hope that they take away that they have the right to vote and they have the right to accommodations. And that if the accommodations aren't being provided, that's not, like, that shouldn't be their personal problem. Those accommodations should be there. There should be a way for them to vote. They should be able to call their county or their city or their local officials and say, hey, I need to be able to vote. What is available? What accommodations are available? How can I do that?
I think more to the point is, like, the counties, you know, and each of the, why can't I think of the word?
Precincts,
yeah. Like, they need to recognize that it's incumbent upon them to provide accommodations. But as per usual, it's always up to disabled people to be like, give me accommodations.
Totally. And that's a story we honestly got quite a few times in the series, are that people really wanted to vote and they would call every year and say, hey, this is my situation. This is what I need. Last year I went and the AVU, the accessible voting unit, wasn't turned on. That's a problem. Or the auto mark, you know, the poll worker didn't know how to use it. And so I couldn't vote. Like, we have several stories of people who have gone year after year and tried to make it work. And sometimes it's worked and sometimes it hasn't. It just hasn't been super consistent. And that's really frustrating.
I'm hoping that this is a starting point, at least for people to be able to point to and say, hey, I do have rights.
Yeah. And because, like, we absolutely have rights. In the series, we talk about several different laws that already exist. Everything's supposed to be accessible. You're supposed to have accommodations. They should already be there. And especially in stories where it's like, there was an accessible voting unit, but just nobody plugged it in. Like, that's so frustrating to hear, right? Because, the equipment's already there. It's already available. And there was just, like, one more step of actually plugging it in to make the voting possible. And that is always really frustrating to hear, that almost story, right? Where, like, it was almost accessible. And I'm concerned with this voting in fall is that we're going to have an almost story again. Like, oh, well, we almost considered some other options to make voting more accessible, but then we didn't. And I don't want that to be the case.
That's extremely frustrating even to hear, because I can imagine that if you're that voter whose machine was not plugged in, that you're not going to want to go to the polls next year. You know, why would you even bother?
Right.
You know, they clearly didn't care about you once before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's there's a lot of frustration out there because there, you know, folks with disabilities, we want to participate. We want to vote. Policies really affect us. Policies about healthcare, policies about housing, policies about jobs. They all affect folks with disabilities, and we're definitely not voting in proportion to how many laws are being written that directly affect us.
Amen to that. That is so true. I mean, this is the kind of episode where I really appreciate talking about something that's such a huge issue, and it also manages to bum me out at the same time because we're still having this conversation. Like, why are we still having this conversation? I know why, but I'm sick of it.
Yeah. No, I definitely feel that. I think that there was, before I did the project, I think there was part of me that's like, oh yeah, you know, you can vote if you want to vote. You just, you know, you put a little work into it. And then I really dug deep and I was like, wow, it is, like, I know that they, whoever they are, I'll try to be a little vague here, don't want people to vote. Like, we know that voter suppression is a huge problem in many communities. And we know that folks with disabilities are kind of disproportionately represented in the communities that are already super big targets for voter suppression. And so we're really getting like a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 punch of these are all the ways that your vote, we're trying to keep your vote, or sorry, these are all the ways that we're trying to keep you from voting. There's just so many overlapping layers of suppression.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of the situation in, I think it was Georgia.
Yes.
During the last presidential election where they were like, we're just going to close. Was it the presidential election? Maybe
yeah,
it wasn't.
I think that it was. I thought that it was in 2016.
Okay, when they were just like, yeah, we're actually just going to close different places to vote because, or the polling locations, because they're not compliant with the Americans with Disabilities Act. And it's like that you could just fix the accessibility, but no, instead you're going to close it and suppress entire precincts of voters. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately, Georgia was not one of the PNAs that was in the series, but we do have some other folks who are definitely talking about the ways that suppression is hitting multiply marginalized communities. But yeah, weaponizing the ADA to like further disenfranchise voters of color is real rough. That's like the nicest way I can say it. Like it's
disgusting.
Gross is what it is.
Yeah, it's absolutely gross. And it's, you know, if you close a polling place down because it's not accessible, you're supposed to replace it with an accessible option. But yeah, it's very clear that sort of the only moment that folks with disabilities are being included was as a way to disenfranchise other voters. Rather than like, oh, hey, we actually need to make this accessible. It was just a weird excuse to close polling places.
Gotta love pitting minorities against each other.
Yeah. I think it goes so well, wouldn't you say? everyone benefits and nothing is lost.
So like, what can we do? I mean, we can watch the series, but is there other action that we can take?
Yeah, what a great question. I've really been focusing on getting the series together, but in terms of other actions, I do think that having a more kind of unified voice between like other civil rights advocates that are really, really invested in voting rights, like including the disability perspective, because I do think one of the things that I learned is that there's not really a disability voice in a lot of these other voting movements. Obviously, there's some disability specific, you know, organizations, which are great, but I think we're still struggling to get the disability perspective in the larger conversation around voter suppression. I think it's still very much not there. So I guess like little things could even be like if you're seeing candidate videos or information on social media and there's not captions or there's no audio descriptions of videos, like write comments, be like, hey, this needs to be captioned. Or ask for other resources, which again is people having to do their own advocacy all the time. But I think, you know, I think unfortunately that's still where we're at, is getting this issue to be like for people to take it really seriously instead of just not thinking about it at all, which I think is unfortunately a little bit where we're at right now. Other actions. I'm trying to think while I'm talking and that's not going super great. So.
No, I think honestly, you really covered it. Kyle, do you think that we have reached the grand moment of final takeaways, or do you have any other questions?
My question is, could be a final takeaway, kind of.
Oh, yeah.
I'll let you off with an easy one. D- Do you have a favorite episode?
Oh, I don't have a favorite episode. I don't think I have a favorite episode. I think probably the episode about when you can't get to the polls is going to be the most relevant for this particular moment in time, because we are all in a moment in time where we can't really get to anywhere. I do have, so we have jokes in the series. We wanted to make it kind of a punchy John Oliver style thing, which like it sort of is, and then it's sort of its own thing. But I fought for two jokes, and I don't even know if they're funny anymore. But
they are funny.
There's a bachelorette joke and there's a gritty joke. And those are the two jokes that I was gritty. Like, no. Yeah.
Yes.
I did it for you, Emily. I really, really fought to keep it's, and it's barely even a joke, but I really fought to keep that reference in there. And I really fought to make my nerdy bachelorette joke. And so those were the hills I chose to die on.
Kyle has already seen it. Alexa obviously has seen it because she worked on it. I haven't. But honestly, if you need a selling point, people, there's a gritty joke. And I love gritty so much. My boyfriend jokes that gritty is my other boyfriend. So
that's fair.
Isn't he, though?
He actually is. Yes, he is. He really is. I love him so much.
Yeah, go and find the jokes in there. Yeah, I wrote the series with Imani. I filmed it. I'm editing it. I've really been in it since the beginning, since we started outlining and figuring out what did we want to include, what did each P&A want us to cover, how do we smoosh that all together. And like
our special guest does it all.
Yes, I do. Yeah. So obviously not everything made it into the episodes. They're only about 5 minutes apiece. So it's concise looks at these issues, but we're really hoping that these start a larger conversation, and that, hearing people's stories, people's individual stories about voting and why they think it's important and what's worked for them, what hasn't worked for them, can start a larger conversation so people can feel more represented in maybe not having access to voting or, just feeling included and like part of democracy. Cause I think often, it's a weird moment, right? Like it's hard to feel motivated. I think to vote in this particular pandemic moment, to be honest. I've been working on this series and obviously I want people to watch it. I want people to vote, to figure out strategies to vote, but I do think it's a little hard to be motivated. But I think it's more important than ever that we try to vote and we try and engage with the process.
I hope this lights a fire under people to do that.
Yeah. I mean, lighting a fire might be like overreach for the current moment that we're in terms
fair,
of
global pandemic. Fair.
So I would take like just, like a little bit of chutzpah, just a skosh, a dash. would be enough. I don't think I need a full bonfire of motivation from people, but maybe hopefully it gives people the sense that they're not the only people experiencing these barriers and that it's kind of BS that these barriers still exist and they shouldn't. But there is a lot of disagreement between voting groups. Even groups who are trying to make voting happen. And so I think that disagreement is sometimes overwhelming, but I'm hoping people are more open to honest conversations about what it's going to take to get voting to happen. I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, couldn't have said it better myself.
Because there is a bunch of tension between around security and having online voting options, even though online voting options are probably going to end up being the most accessible, but I don't know if we want to include that whole debate in here because it's pretty spicy.
Yeah, I feel like that's a whole
yeah, that's for another that. Day. Okay, yeah,
I was trying not to go into too many super specifics.
Yeah, no, I think that you've covered a whole lot, and we can sort of cut and paste. And by we, I mean Kyle because he's brilliant. Kyle, do you have anything we should add or cover, or do you want to do your own final takeaway?
No, I just want to thank Alexa for her time.
So, special guest, where can we find these voting videos?
Yeah, the voting videos will be available by the end of April, and they will be at voteforaccess.us. So VOTEFORACCESS.US.
I'm pretty pumped.
So am I.
I was sort of like looking at my notes to be like, did I say that thing that I felt was essential before? I think I wrote it better, but that's fine. You can use any of that for any kind of share text you want, Kyle.
Don't you? You are fine.
So that has been another episode of The Accessible Soul. I'm Emily. He's Kyle. And I have always wanted to do that because he always beats me to it.
Success.
And might we say, you look great today. Stay indoors. Wash your hands, please.
Seriously, wash them.
Yeah, wash your hands and then vote.
And then wash your hands after you vote.
Yes.
Who knows where those ballots have been?
Oh my gosh.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
We love ya. Bye.